Biden's first budget is out at the end of this week. Is he keeping promises made on the campaign trail? Ed Blakely is a former Washington insider, now living in Sydney, Australia. My name is Sean Britton from the radio station 2SER. Find us each and every week wherever you find good podcasts, and you as a vet, as well as on Facebook and Twitter. The first Biden budget to be released this Friday in the United States. Ed, what do we know? Any predictions?
Well, it's going to be a huge deficit with more to come. There'll be a lot more money going into the things that Trump cut out. The environment, social programs, food, education, and of course, the big one is going to be infrastructure, where I think it'll be slim on the budget in the anticipation of that bill passing, and that one will be bigger. But we know exactly where he's going: health, education, and infrastructure to repair the nation's people and its places.
Infrastructure could count for some half of the $4 trillion of government spending predicted for this budget, but we still don't have an exact plan in place.
Well, for the first piece order of business, there's almost $1 billion worth of repair work that has to be done to existing roads and so on. A trillion, I mean. Guys, you get mixed up with trillions and millions. But there's almost $1 trillion worth to be spent on repairing the existing stuff. Even the Republicans admit that. They want $800 billion to repair what's broken. But in order to get into the next century, it's really very clear after my conversation with some people from Japan, that if you are not in front in the new infrastructure concerning chips, automation, IT, artificial intelligence, and so on, you're not going to be in the ball game at all. The Chinese are so far ahead in those areas, we will be huffing and puffing to catch up with them. So this is not a road and bridges thing. This is really a digital infrastructure bill.
One I've seen a lot of discussion around is student debt relief. While campaigning, Biden issued support for $10,000 of student debt relief, you know, per student. Progressives see this as a key promise and have pushed for a great deal more relief, but it doesn't appear to be in this budget. Some have sort of doubled down, saying Biden should deal with this via executive order, but Biden wants to work with Congress on the legislation, and that legislation is not going to this budget. What is happening?
Well, I think this is one where he's between the hard place and the hard place. A lot of students have paid their debt. So what do you do about them? You really have to think this through. This debt is debt. That is, bonds have been issued. And so there are bondholders, a lot of them institutional. But nonetheless, you've got to fill their coffers with the money to pay off the debt. It's not just a stroke of a pen, because the person who's holding the bag is some oldie like me who owns some of this debt in his portfolio. So you got to think about that. Now, if this is a yield of 3%, 4%, 5%, 6%, where am I going to get that 6% again? So it's more complicated. They never should have gotten in the student debt business at all. But now that you're in it, it is a devil to get out of. I think the best way to do it is settle it with this, as we have in Australia. Your student debt payment should never exceed X percent of the income you're getting through your pay or whatever is taxable. And that money just comes off the top. You don't notice it. If you pay it off, you do. If you don't, you don't.
Also on social welfare, the Americans Families Plan included a proposal to extend enhanced subsidies through the ACA approved by Congress in March. But that again falls short of plans to see 97% of Americans with health insurance that Biden touted during the presidential campaign as well. Look, I mean, Biden sort of came into the White House as a whirlwind when it came to undoing the Trump agenda. But is he resting on his laurels on some of these ones?
You know, what he's doing is facing reality. There's good debt and bad debt, as you know. Good debt helps pay for itself in the future. Some of this is dead money. And when you put money in this coffer, particularly this one, it means more money and more money and more money. So again, this has to be thought through as to how you deal with the Affordable Care Act. For a short time, that'll work. But forever, you have to figure some source of funding, such as a bigger levy on Medicare, as we're thinking about here in Australia, to pay this debt, particularly for us old birds. Now, I noticed euthanasia bills are passing state legislatures pretty rapidly, and maybe that's the way to handle that.
It's a grim outlook, but perhaps. Moving on from this one, no doubt we'll touch on this again when the actual announcements come out at the end of this week. We'll touch on this again next week, but moving on for this week, wouldn't you want to be a fly on the wall for this one? Biden is set to meet with the Russian President Vladimir Putin in the famously neutral Geneva coming up in June. Now, this is brand new news as of this morning. Stands to be quite possibly a very awkward conversation. Ed, what do you think will be addressed?
They've probably already written the communique for this one. As progress was made on very important issues, more talks are required. But this is a good starting point. Full stop. See, I wrote it for them. They're going to say nothing about nothing. Biden will have to say something about Crimea and places like this, but he has to be careful. He wants the Germans to get their gas coming from Russia. The Russians have to be careful because their economy is in a bit of a shambles, and internally they're in weak shape. So this is a good time for Biden because Putin isn't in as strong position as he was. So he needs a little bit of relief from the United States. And Putin knows he's not dealing with a Trump where it's a one-man band. He's dealing with the entire United States.
So Biden's not going to go into this one and threaten to shirt front him as sort of a former Australian PM did.
I don't think so.
Onto a couple of policing issues, and this week marks the one-year anniversary of the killing of George Floyd. Now, Biden will be hosting Floyd's family at the White House, but more importantly, Biden promised action on policing so deaths like Floyd's wouldn't happen at the rate they've been happening for many, many years now. The family is demanding the George Floyd Justice in Policing Act to be passed, saying the anniversary served as a deadline. Ed, what do you feel needs to happen?
Well, he thought this was going to happen, and apparently the Senate and the House are close to agreement, whatever that means. I suspect there's the big issue here is whether policemen can be held for acts they commit while doing their duties that might appear to be harmful to the person. And, you know, everyone's thinking about, you know, some little guy who accidentally breaks the arm of some guy fleeing something, and then they're going to be sued for $100 million, et cetera. Those are the worst cases. So something has to be done on that front. Other than that, I think the Republicans are ready to cave on this. Because almost every state has passed almost the equivalent of that law already.
And just in regards to policing as well, Biden has reportedly reined in the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Agency, ICE, from performing the kind of street-level roundups and actions that became especially prevalent during the Trump administration, looking to refocus the agency's mission. Where is the focus going to be, Ed?
Well, I think there are three foci or focuses, whatever it is. My Latin's terrible right now. But the first one is to have those agents actually sniffing out the really bad guys. There are a number of the drug dealers get across the border first. So they're wasting a lot of time going after these little people who were seeking asylum. The second is to improve security by getting things done earlier, long before they reach the United States. And that means more investments in Latin America, but it also means getting Mexico on side with respect to some drug enforcement and some detention of some of those bad. And the third is trying to deal with the Trump era stuff with respect to the children and other bad actions that occurred. They don't have enough human power to try to get those kids back and arrest people now. So divert some of those resources to getting the kids back, get yourself in shape there, and then you might do some of this again. But I suspect some of the people who were hired to do those jobs will be looking for new employment. They were really bad actors.
And before moving on to a couple of, specifically international stories this week, COVID and theories that the coronavirus escaped or in some way was released from the Wuhan Institute of Virology seem to be gaining credence in the US this week. Efforts to find a natural source of the virus have failed. Not that China has been particularly forthcoming in investigations. Anthony Fauci himself has said this week he's not convinced it developed naturally, although I think it's fair to say he's very much hedging his bets. And the top US health official has called for more investigation into the pandemic's origins. Ed, where do we go from here?
I think early on we said if they didn't accidentally spill something or allow this disease to spread faster than it should have by negligence, no matter what they did at the start, it got away from them. And it could have been they actually used some viral thing to test it on some population and it got away. They're not going to come clean. There are people who have to know absolutely what happened, how the universe came into existence. No matter what we do, we'll always be speculating about this. To me, this is a personal view, the Chinese are guilty. It doesn't matter how it happened. If you're negligent in street markets, it doesn't matter, or negligent in your labs. You crippled the world. You ought to be called out for that, and there ought to be reparations.
Israel and the Gaza situation is currently in ceasefire, but a longer-term solution seems far-flung in terms of possibility. Hard to see a path forward to a two-state solution, any solution, that really, that one's the only one that's really worth talking about, I think, here.
That's the only one that's worth talking about. I think the Israelis dug themselves into a huge hole here now, where the two-state solution actually is a better option for them. They have a situation where their population is not growing and the Palestinian population, Arab population, is growing. They have a situation where more than half the world views them as guilty of mass deaths caused no matter who initiated them. And so they don't have very good publicity. And this cruelty has not gained anything except giving Hamas more recognition and more authority. So if there were another state created, a Palestinian state might ask Israel for aid to put down Hamas if they're a state. If they're not, they can't. So I think the course of action is to set up a state, and it may be a puppet state, But Israel needs that state right now.
And in Belarus, news this week of a plane being forced to divert and land in Belarus while carrying journalist Roman Protasevich with the paper-thin cover of an alleged bomb threat. It's being called a state-sponsored hijacking. Roman faces a possible death penalty in the country for speaking out against Alexander Lukashenko, who is otherwise struggling to cling to power. Both Roman and his partner taken off the flight by Belarusian authorities. Ed, what do you see happening here?
Just what we know happened. They were going after this guy and foolishly violated every law and protocol known to man in bringing down the plane. That means that any Belarus aircraft that flies out of Belarusia is subject to being pulled out of the air by anybody.
Mm.
They didn't think this one through very carefully. They thought, well, we do this and nobody's really going to bother. I would not be flying south toward Iran or Iraq. I would not be flying north into the Scandinavia. And I certainly wouldn't go near any American installation in Turkey. The Belarusians have made a mess.
And saving the best till last, not really, but Manhattan's district attorney has convened a grand jury, the grand jury that is expected to decide whether to indict former President Donald Trump or others close to him as part of the ongoing investigation into the Trump Foundation, which, as we mentioned last week, has turned into a criminal investigation. More to come, Ed. Where are we at on this one? Just sort of watch this space.
Well, I think we know what the crime is. I think we know how it was committed. I think we know who the conspirators are. The question is, what happens next? Putting an ex-president in jail doesn't leave a good taste in my mind. Having people know, like the situation in Wuhan, what happened clearly is a good idea. I think the end game here is to hobble him so that running for office is just not on. There is almost no doubt that the, how would you put it, there were some sharp business practices going on in the Trump empire.
Yeah, if you want to call them business practices, yes, I'm sure.
Yeah, but everybody in the world knows what they did in Atlantic City. So if that's that transparent, it doesn't take a lot to figure out what was going on in New York.
Mm.
And now the question for Trump is, how many of family members and close friends who participated in these things might go to jail?
Ed and I will be back next week to talk all the latest in US news and politics. Check out the new podcast as well, also featuring Ed and myself, as well as producer Tina Quinn, Pacific Conversations. Latest episode is Dominic Dwyer addressing the COVID-19 pandemic. The website is edtalks.com.au. We have an app. Search Pacific Conversations or Ed Talks wherever you find your apps. And check out the podcast wherever you find good podcasts. As I say, Pacific Conversations right there with US of Ed.